This is the September 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. She's in Morton, Illinois. Mike Zuzulo joins us from Atchison, Kansas at GlobalComResearch.com. And Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting. He's out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org. Just click and play from the website or search for us in your favorite podcast application. Let's begin by getting a list of items we should discuss for the week. Ellen Dearden, what's on your list?
I sure'd like to talk about the value of the dollar after the monthly chart showed a break under the little uptrend line. And when we went to about 92, so what's going to be next? Is it going to be 88.5 to 89? That's next area support.
Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com.
I think the biggest thing to talk about today for me, Todd, is the short term versus the long term, China and versus the U.S. election and the USDA WASDE report. It seems like we're coming into a very, very busy time period just as the farmers ramp up to start shelling corn and cutting beans.
And finally, Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting.
Don't have a whole lot to add other than, does the trade work in that low enough crop number, or is the crop number that they're working about right?
Well, let's start there, and I'll begin, I think, Mike Zuzulo with you. USDA, of course, on Friday of next week, this week, if you happen to be listening to this on Monday, Labor Day, will release the September crop production report. It will be the first time for this year and the first time that it's ever been this late, because usually they do it in August, that they have included an objective yield in the update. What do you think they will find?
Well, that's a tough one, Todd, because they've got a lot of information to go through, not just the private estimates, which, you know, they do rank themselves now against the trade estimates before the report comes out, and they make note of that, and so they do watch that more closely than they used to. We've also got the issues with the harvested acres that they may have to knock down in Iowa. They probably will knock down in Iowa. And then we've got the crop conditions, which over the last month have fallen like a rock to match up with the drought monitor. And it really begs the question why the NAS people have always said we don't really use crop conditions for our yield figuring. But the trade sure acted like they did up until this last couple weeks. And so I think it's wide open. I can tell you what I think the model, my price model, based upon where we're at trading 950, 960 November beans, we're probably getting down below a 500 million bushel carryover at this point in terms of what the trade's pricing in for the soybeans. So there could be quite a bit of more reduction if we lose more yield here in the next couple weeks. For the corn, the price model trading around that 350, 345, 350 level would suggest we're probably now below 2.5 billion bushels, maybe getting closer to 2.2, 2.3 billion bushels. So I think that helps explain maybe why the beans have had a little bit more firmness to them recently here in the last few days versus the corn. So that's kind of where what I'm looking at going into the report. But I think it's wide open. Final year estimates probably won't be until we get to January because of how different this crop is, what we got planted early versus what we got planted late.
Ellen Dearden, your thoughts on what this next crop production report will look like?
I think the big question to me is going to be harvested acres, whether USDA really lowers those on this report or not. But I'm sitting at the 179 area on corn yield and just over 51 bushels to the acre on beans, but the harvested acres are wide open.
So right now they have harvested acres for corn at 84 million. How wide open is it, do you think?
On corn, I have lopped off at least a million acres, and my numbers that I've been working with this week are off 1.2 million. From
and Dan Zwicker, do you have anything to add to this part of the conversation?
I mean, at least the crop size is moving in the right direction for supporting prices. The problem I think we still have is, you know, we're in a subdivision with still too many houses for sale, and it's going to be real hard to, you know, maintain any kind of period of price strength without some major changes down the road. I think it'll be interesting to see whether or not the crop is going to be short enough here for this, on the September crop report, that we could maybe, you know, close out the month of September on a counter seasonal note, which means it would rally during September rather than decline. But that's to be seen, and what kind of changes USGA, you know, puts on the balance sheets, I guess, next week.
What other things in the balance sheet are you going to watch really closely this time around, Mike Suslow? I'm thinking about some of the things that USDA has managed up pretty dramatically for this crop year from the, or for the coming crop year from the current crop year.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the domestic demand is really strong. The livestock feeding demand, feeding residual, as we call it, that they've really come on hard with that. It'll be interesting to see if they trim that at all based upon the COVID, because that's something they really haven't done that much. Ethanol numbers, I would think, would remain fairly steady at this point, given the weekly crush we've seen, and that the fact especially that the break-evens haven't gone negative that much at all in the last 30 days, Todd. I think maybe the biggest thing I always look at is the world wheat number, because I really do feel like this wheat market has been a real boon for the stability and the ability of the corn and beans to hold on to their price gains. Obviously, South American prices are a big deal with when it comes to that, but I think also just psychologically and from an index perspective, commodity index perspective, the wheat has been a big, big deal. And so I would like to see a reduction in global wheat ending stocks, or at least a reduction in wheat stocks to use ratios. That is very important to me as we go forward into winter wheat planting.
You know, Ellen, on the ethanol side, USDA raised the 2021 marketing year higher, up from 4.85 in their last estimate for this current year to 5.2 billion bushels. It's a big number. I'm wondering whether you really think we can reach that capacity.
Short answer, no. I don't think we're going to get there. We're still, you know, 12% below a year ago on production, and I think we will stay that way. The work from home directives that I hear about from my city friends are running well into the first of 2021. And that says to me that we're just not going to meet that ethanol lofty expectation.
So do we drop 350 million out of that, or where?
We're probably back to that 4.85 again. You know, we're not going to be over 5 billion bushel.
How much of an impact does that have?
Well, it's a day in, day out impact, if you know what I mean. We just always are looking at that market as a demand factor every single day. So I think it's not a here's the problem today, but it's going to go away later problem. I think it's just going to be a steady, slow grind.
And then if you look at the numbers for livestock and feed for this year, 5.6 billion bushels, and they projected in July for the new crop, 5.85, and again raised it in August to 5.925. Can they reach that?
I don't know. If this hog market comes back, probably we could reach the 5.85 at least.
So I suppose what I'm trying to work towards, and I would like each of you to think about and talk about this a little bit, is USDA has had some pretty lofty numbers for the 2021 corn crop on consumption domestically, both feed use and ethanol. Will they have to back off of those, and will that offset any changes that happen to come in harvested or yield from the corn? I think, Mike Suslow, I'll let you take that up.
Yeah, I think Ellen's right on the money. I'm not sure they'll do it this coming month. They may chop away at it. I think this is where USDA will rob Peter to pay Paul, if you will, when it comes to if they cut yield back and come in line with the private estimates on the supply side, they'll probably come in line and cut back some of the demand too, because they'll rationalize that you're not going to have that kind of a demand base if you can't have that kind of a supply base. So I really only look at the ending stocks numbers. I'm sure the others do too, but that's where it goes back to. If we come in with an ending stocks number at 2.5 billion or more, that opens the door for more downside, I think, Todd, especially if we go into harvest here in the next week. We don't have any rainy weather or any kind of weather that slows us down from getting started in harvest. So that's probably one of the key numbers, is, or if it is the key number for me when it comes to getting more corn hedges on, is what's the U.S. ending stocks going to be for corn, not necessarily what the yield is or what the ethanol demand is.
How far along do you think producers should try to get in their new crop sales for both corn and soybeans?
40% cash is where I'm at on beans, with another 40% in bought January puts. I'm a lot less aggressive on the corn because I think the world numbers look a lot more ideal. I think the global demand from China especially could really offset some of the negative demand mindset maybe we're talking about here in the domestic market. So I'm only about 25% done in the cash side with 2020 corn and no puts on it all right now.
And Alan Dearden, I'd like your view on that as well. And then to talk about the dry weather conditions and how that offsets across the planet, that is, and what that might mean.
Okay. On the bean side, I would agree with Mike. I think you need to have 40% at least on the cash side sold, with the rest of the crop covered with puts. Just seems to me we have no carry in this bean market at all, and the mindset ought to be to be moving beans early into the cash market. You have good carry in the corn market. I find it difficult to want to sell corn at December futures in the 350 area when we have an insurance guaranteed price at 388. So I'm a little bit less interested in selling new crop corn, but I also have looked very seriously at selling some 2021 crop beans.
And then to follow up, what do you see around the planet that gives you either hope or not, as it's related to weather conditions that could provide some upside potential?
Well, I look at South America and southern Brazil and northern Argentina. It's very dry. You know, that right now is affecting the wheat market. You've got Ukraine dry. You've got Russia dry. Europe's mostly dry. It looks like Australia's moving back into the dry side of things. That, to me, should be supportive on the wheat side, but also secondarily corn as a feed grain.
Dan Zwicker, what does your intuition tell you about the rest of this year? Or maybe I should more rightfully ask you, what are your technicals telling you about the rest of this year?
Well, you know, short term, I think farmers need to kind of get what they need to be sold or managed or whatnot between now and, you know, the election. November 1st might be able to hang on a little longer than that. But I do think sales need to be fairly heavy, and or downside price protection should be fairly heavy, because I think we'll go into a winter low. And then at that point in time, if they wanted to re-own inventory, whatnot, for a rally maybe in 21. When you look at the long-term picture, I mean, you basically, we've been tracking sideways in this market for several years. So somewhere along the line, you're going to see a big run up in these prices. I don't know exactly when that could still be 2 years away or 3 years or however long it could be. We could still be several years away, but I do think there's potential down the road to have a pretty good rally. But in the short term here, I guess over the next couple months or during the fall months, I kind of, in the opinion that everybody kind of needs to get all of their cash flow managed pretty well, locked in place, prepare for weakness as you go on into the winter and spring months, and then we'll see what the summer growing season brings as we go next year for some kind of recovery rally. So that's kind of about where I'm at, looking at the cyclicals. They're just a wild guess, like everything else in this market. But I do think when you have fall price strength, it usually tees up that your January hype, January prices have a strong tendency to be calendar year highs along with that. That's one of the reasons why I kind of want to get myself pretty well covered. I call it managed, risk managed, whatever, and have my cash sales pretty well taken care of. And then we'll see what happens, you know, after the election and the start of the new year and what kind of growing season we have next year.
Alan Dearden, you suggested we should talk about the value of the dollar. We mentioned ethanol. We've talked about consumption on the feed side. Exports, and the dollar would play into this, are the one place that we have not discussed very much. What are your thoughts?
Exports have been hot. And today's or Thursday's export bookings report showed China as the main buyer of everything. Corn, milo, wheat, soybeans, pork, feet, hides, everything. So it was all about China in this last week's time. Will that continue? Who knows? But the value of the dollar sure puts us in a much more competitive position than even 30, 60 days ago for corn and wheat in particular. Brazil's got some of the highest prices. They do have the highest price they've ever seen for beans right now. Corn prices are strong in Brazil as well. So shipments out of South America probably will slow down a little bit if the buyers are interested in buying a well-priced grain, which with a cheaper dollar can certainly push us up to the top.
Mike, I'll put you on the spot a little bit. Are the Chinese buying to meet their phase one trade agreement, or are they buying because of the low value of U.S. commodities and it just happens to play into the phase one trade agreement?
Both of those, and also I think it's becoming more well known or at least expected that they are facing a shortfall in their grain supplies, that between a combination of overselling their domestic supplies, their domestic supplies may be going out of condition, and also just not having the right numbers. I found out from an Asian colleague this week that it seems as though the Chinese are actually auditing themselves. The Ministry of Agriculture is going in and auditing certain provinces, officials of certain provinces that are responsible for telling the centralized government, telling them what's happening in pork supply, corn supply, et cetera. And they're auditing those people now in some of these key provinces, from what I understand. So I think there is a demand issue there, and we don't understand what's been happening at all because of the lockdown that they've put in the internet when it comes to getting anything information out when it comes to their natural disasters. they physically are putting people under arrest if they send anything out, from what Radio Free Asia is talking about. So I think there's a variety of reasons that they're doing it, Todd.
It looks like they'll have a very good corn crop, but that, as you and Ellen both mentioned, they might still fall short just because of on-hand stocks that have either gone out of condition or been used, have been wasted in some form. How long will they have to buy, do you suppose? And will they continue to come to the U.S.?
I think that goes back to the election. I really do. And I think this is where the election, for if any other reason why you don't hedge this rally, I think the election is the answer, because you really do have a different foreign policy structure probably if Vice President wins. And on Vice President Biden's website, his clean energy policy says he wants to be net zero net zero emissions by 2050. And that's just right down the road. I mean, that's less than a generation away. So I think this is where these questions we don't know, but we do know what's profitable. And we do know that there's going to be a lot more uncertainty if administrations change hands, whether it's China or commodity markets when it comes to fossil fuels or whatever it is. It's just the long term, and that's what I wanted to bring up today on the Commodity Week. The long term to me is 60 days out right now.
That's not very long.
No, because the election. That, I mean, you talk about Federal Reserve policy. Everything that we look at that moves markets in terms of trends, it really does come down to the election, in my opinion. Maybe I'm overstating it, but I'd rather be err on the side of caution than act like nothing's going to change if we see a new administration. So that's my mindset, is the long term is about 60 days away.
I just kind of want to make a comment a little bit what Ellen talked about on the value of the dollar is, I mean, the way I look at it, we've reached a point of no return as far as a federal deficit goes. It's not only a federal deficit, it's every taxing body in the country is way in over their head, whether it's state government, local government, library district, school district, whatever. And I just, we're at the point we can't raise interest rates. As soon as you raise interest rates, you absorb all the revenue that comes into that taxing body. So, you know, I think the dollar, basically, we're going to go through a major currency devaluation. Whether or not you want to call that inflation, I don't know. The textbook definition of inflation is a lot of dollars chasing a limited amount of goods, but there's also inflation through just plain currency devaluation. And an observation here, many of you already know, I mean, Dr. Pepper is from Waco, Texas, and they made an announcement here a couple weeks ago that they're going to have to cut back on production because there's not enough cans. And I started investigating, you know, what do they mean, not enough aluminum cans to make Dr. Pepper? And all of your junk dealers, your salvage dealers, they're all sticky. They're all piling up all the metals and the aluminums and the coppers. They're all sitting on it. They're not moving any of that into the marketplace to be recycled. And so I guess it tells me that they're all bullish. They're waiting on a big pop in commodity prices. When that comes, I don't know. But I thought was quite interesting that your soda companies are running short on aluminum cans because everybody's stockpiling them. I just thought that was quite interesting. Kind of reminds me something of the late 60s, early 70s.
A couple of other things that we probably should take up before we get done with our conversation today. Ellen, have you been discussing bin space and what producers should do? I guess probably fill it with corn first, right? And leave it there, as much corn as you can put in it?
I have recommended that guys get rid of their cash wheat, so clearing wheat out of bins to make space for corn. I'm not interested in stockpiling beans, and if I have to do it, I'll take beans to town because I think it will be a short storage time period for beans.
Mike Zuzlow?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what Ellen just said. I think you really want to focus on that old crop wheat, and also make sure the old crop corn is still in condition as well, because I think the quality is going to be really possibly bid up again this year, because I am concerned about some of the quality and test weights and issues. Irrigated clients in Nebraska are calling more and more, talking about concerns about their corn and not being there, and maybe the quality not being there as well. So I think that's something to watch out as well.
And Dan?
I assume basis contracts won't be as popular this year.
maybe not.
But they may work this year. I don't know. They obviously didn't work last year. It's just real hard to make stuff pay. Depending upon what kind of fall price we have. I mean, I guess I'm kind of a cash man. And then maybe if I want to reown it with options, so I know what my defined cost is of reowning. But yes, if you got bin space, use it. But remember, you're a producer, you're not a grain merchandiser. And I've always told people that if they wanted to merchandise grain if they want to play the bases and the hedges and all that kind of stuff. Just go down to Decatur and get a desk and a phone, and you can basis trade all day long. So farmers are not good basis traders, but, you know, they do, you know, storage does pay usually, but you got to know when to let it go too. So that's kind of where I'm at for this year.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. I'll start with you, Ellen Dearden at AgriView out of Morton, Illinois.
Just a reminder, we've been up more than a dollar in beans from a low in November at 8.31 up to the high that we put in Thursday at 9.68. Don't forget about beans. No carry in this market might be a really good opportunity to sell some cash.
Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com.
The very short term, Todd, before the USDA report a week from Friday, I'd say the top two factors for the grains are the South American cash prices. We're still running $50 a ton below Paranagua right now at their port. In soybeans, we're getting close to break even with the Argentines and the Brazilians in corn. But South American cash prices and our weather here the next 5, 6, 10 days before that report probably be the two biggest factors driving this market. After the WASD report, if there aren't any surprises, I think it turns into yields from the fields and then the election polls. I think the polls are going to start being traded very heavily in these markets. They may have already started with some of the equity movement as Vice President Biden has gained in the polls. It seems that that's starting to turn the stock market lower and some of these other commodities like gold lower as well.
And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting.
I pretty well said what I wanted to say about markets, so I guess I'll say this is a time of year to, you know, be extra careful moving machinery from one farmstead to the other farmstead and getting inside bins and whatnot, and just be safe and take your time.
Good advice. Thank you so much to our panelists today, including Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Mike Zuzulo from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find us, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. WILLAG.org is the website, or look for us in your favorite podcast applications. Just search for Commodity Week. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.